Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
You're listening to Real College Podcast, and I'm your host, Alex Schumacher. With the recent UN report put out that up to 1 million species are at risk of extinction because of humans, paying attention to the environment and our planet has never been more important. And though Earth Day came and went in April, I think we can all agree that one day, at this point, simply isn't enough. On this episode of Real College Podcast, we're taking a look about how we can be better at caring for our planet. We've got history, food, textiles, and more here on Real College Podcast. If we're going to make a real difference in caring for our planet, having just one day is never going to be enough. But Earth Day and the history behind it are still hugely important to look at. Hannah Dove has more.
Earth Day 2019 feels like it came and went with little fanfare, other than the occasional post on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram about recycling or the need to save our Earth. With so much news surrounding global warming, protecting natural spaces, and rescuing endangered species, it feels like every day should be Earth Day. But how did the original Earth Day get its start? Where did it come from? And in a climate where the environment is our number one priority, is a single Earth Day even necessary anymore? Hannah Dove with RCP investigates the men, the myths, and the legends behind the original Earth Day. First, we'll take a step back in history and start from the very beginning, which in fact is more or less debated between two sides. The first side holds that Gaylord Nelson, a U.S. senator from Wisconsin between 1963 and 1981, as well as an environmental activist, was the first to come up with the idea of a National Earth Day.
I don't think there's any other issue viewed in its broadest sense, which is as critical to mankind, as the issue of the quality of the environment in which we live. You hear the word ecology, that's a big science, not a narrow one. It's a big concept. And it is concerned with all the ramifications of all the relationships of all living creatures to each other and their environment. It is concerned with the total ecosystem, not just how we dispose of tin cans, bottles, and our garbage. It is concerned with the habitat of marine creatures, animals, birds, and man. And our goal is not just an environment of clean air and water and scenic beauty while forgetting about the worst environments in America, in the ghettos, in the Appalachias, and elsewhere. Our goal is an environment of decency, quality, and mutual respect for all human beings and all other living creatures.
That was a mere snippet of Nelson's Earth Day speech that originally aired on WMVS-TV on April 1970. Infuriated after witnessing the environmental devastation wrought by the 1969 Santa Barbara oil spill after a blowout on a Union Oil offshore oil field, Nelson demanded a natural teach-in on the environment. Or so the story goes. Another side of the story names peace activist John McConnell as the creator of Earth Day after he proposed a day honoring the Earth during the 1969 UNESCO conference in San Francisco. This Earth Day, however, would fall upon March 21st, not April 22nd. And in fact, there had been two separate Earth Days created, with Senator Nelson's being the United States-specific one. It wasn't until 1990 that the Earth date was solidified on April 22nd.
We've apparently reached a point now after however long the human scenario has been, the point where we truly do have within this Promethean capability within our own hands to literally destroy the habitat that could support the species. So that we reached a point that we have never had throughout the human history. And I wonder, in your investigations, do you think we have in fact reached that point where we have the power literally of our own species-wide destruction in our hands for the first time in the evolution of human affairs?
I don't think there's any question of that. I believe a poll among leading scientists around the world would support it. And perhaps there has been something of this kind. But at the same time, we have two sides to the situation. While our ability to destroy has increased geometrically, on the other hand, our capability for renewing the planet has tremendously increased.
That was an interview with McConnell in 1987, 17 years after the official Earth Day had taken root in both the national and global consciousness. What is evidenced by both Nelson and McConnell is that they're both dedicated to not only the environment, but the education surrounding the environment, the science and the technology that can be used to better our planet. But let's focus on the date of April 22nd specifically. Nelson chose it because of its serendipitous location outside the confines of spring exams or school breaks, making it a solid day for environmental teaching. Not only that, but the date falls upon the birthday of John Muir, an early advocate for conservation that had been known as the father of the national parks. But April 22nd also holds another meaning to some as Vladimir Lenin's birthday, and April 22nd, 1970 would have been his centenary. Time magazine's A Memento Mori to the Earth poked fun at those who considered Earth Day a communist ploy, even if some still consider it to be so to this day. But it's no small fact that the New York Times reported that Senator Muskie of Maine charged the FBI with widespread surveillance on the day in question. I guess a bunch of ragtag environmentalists, college kids, and activists bargaining for a better planet appeared like a pretty scary threat. So what do we have now? Earth Day's current global date is April 22nd, but oftentimes festivities last for weeks with planting trees, making an active effort to carpool, or donating to conservation funds around the world. From its activist beginnings to now, some people feel that just posting a short snippet about the environment is not practicing what you preach. And while that is true, the original goal of Earth Day was to inform, to learn, and to impact change by coming together to help protect our planet. And so next Earth Day, whether you're out protesting in a march for science, or helping plant native plants for bees, or creating a compost bin one apple core at a time, know that you're taking part in something that has history behind it, and hopefully has a future to come. With RCP, this is Hannah Dove, signing off.
Though much of what needs to be done to save the planet lies in the hands of regulating large companies and polluters, there are still measures that everyday people like us can do to make a difference. Reducing food waste is one way we can make a huge difference to our planet. Liv Riggins has more.
There's a mismatch between food and hunger in the U.S.
You may have heard the big statistic thrown around a lot is that up to 40% of food that's produced is wasted within the U.S.
At the same time, there's high rates of hunger.
Like one in six Americans will go hungry at some point.
That's Mara Stefan and Will Bergstrom, co-presidents of the University of Minnesota Food Recovery Network, an organization that tries to bridge some of that gap.
So Food Recovery Network, we're a chapter of a national organization, the mission fighting waste and feeding people. So essentially we're trying to recover surplus food and bring that and donate that to address hunger in our community.
We at the moment have two locations for consistent recoveries, and that's on or at Blagan Hall and Carlson.
When Mara and Will say recovery, they're talking about the weekly volunteer-operated food pickups that FRN does. In a recovery, volunteers show up to the kitchen of the dining hall or restaurant in question, follow food safety protocols, and package up food that has not been served but would otherwise be thrown out. Then they carry it out to cars and drive it to their partner organization.
And we bring it to a partner called Loaves and Fishes. They're a Christian organization, I guess you could say, because they distribute mostly to churches. And they started out as a smaller organization, but they've really increased their size and capacity. So now they've started donating their own surplus to smaller organizations. They are completely open to the public. Pretty much anybody that is looking for a meal is able to walk in there. So a lot of the food that we recover is stuff that has not been like out or has not been used at all. Food that has been sitting out like on a buffet table or things that have already been served, we can't take that back.
Through these recoveries, Food Recovery Network is picking up a lot of food.
So for last end of the semester recovery, food that they're not able to save over breaks. So a lot of that is like produce and milk and cottage cheese, things like that. 3,800 pounds.
3,800 pounds. That's almost 2 tons of food recovered from the U of M's dining halls at the end of the semester. The average person eats between 3 and 5 pounds of food per day. So 3,800 pounds, that's the equivalent of almost 2 years of food, all recovered in one event.
It's like, it's pretty astounding how much there is to be recovered from there. And it's great that now we're able to go in and pick at least some of that off.
While the end of semester recoveries are some of the bigger ones that Food Recovery Network does, they're also getting a lot of food on a more regular basis from recoveries at TCF games and from the weekly pickups at Carlson and Blake and Halls.
Recently, we started doing recoveries from TCF Stadium. So after like football, we've been able to go in and pick up.
For the TCF recoveries, we've averaged around 500 pounds per recovery because we've had some smaller, but that's usually just capacity-wise, like how many people we have and how much we can fit in the car. So it's ranged from like 250 to like 750, 800 pounds of food. And it's a shame because like a lot of times we'll like get 800 pounds of food and they'll be like, oh yeah, that's half of it. And it's just crazy to like just see how much food they like cater for each event.
It is pretty shocking.
Although, like, we're definitely not feeding our whole community with the food that we recover, it's just nice to know that we're helping cut out some of the food that would be going to waste.
While Food Recovery Network has already been taking a lot of food out of waste streams and to people who need it, Will and Mara emphasize that food recovery is just one part of a much larger systemic effort to reduce the causes of food waste and causes of hunger for a more sustainable and equitable food system.
Like, addressing more source reduction and like systemic food insecurity issues is obviously crucial. I really love there's like an EPA food recovery hierarchy, details different ways of managing waste. Source reduction, feeding people, then feeding animals, then energy use, then compost, and then landfill is like the very last one. If it's going to landfills, it's like in that environment without oxygen, it's releasing methane gas, which is greenhouse gas contributing to climate change. So like with composting, it is still better than landfill, but ideally would be hitting one of those higher rungs. So that top one is source reduction. So that's essentially planning out more to try to produce less. So we do like to acknowledge that like the top rung, source reduction, is a primary focus and the most effective way of limiting food waste in the first place. But since it can be really hard to plan out exactly how much food you need, and in our current system there is evidently a lot of food waste still, we like to come in that second rung and do what we can to kind of bridge the gap between surplus food and hunger in our communities.
It's just such a big issue, and it does touch so many other parts of different issues in society. Food waste is an issue of, you know, human health. It's an issue of like energy and land use and water and pretty much anything you can think of foods related to it.
This is kind of an entryway into all of those different issues and other groups who are working towards solutions.
You have signups online. Our email is frn@umn.edu. Also, Nutritious U Food Pantry. It's a really cool organization that helps students get food when they a lot of times can't get it themselves. And then a new student group is Brightside UMN. They are a group that looks to get produce into food deserts in areas that do not have proper produce.
So we don't see food recovery as like the only solution, and that kind of plays into like other groups, both on campus and off, collaborating with them and all working together. Within our system, obviously there is food waste. We're doing what we can to bridge that gap, food waste and hunger.
For Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Liv Riggins.
Finally, while reducing waste is one way to make a difference, reusing old products rather than buying new products is another way to make a difference. Ben Hallam has more.
Before 2018, the United States shipped 1.3 million tons of recyclable waste to China every year. But last year, China stopped taking that waste. Practically my whole life, I've been told that one of the easiest ways to take care of the environment was to recycle. But now, it seemed like recycling might not be enough. It might be time to work on another of the three R's that we all learn in school. Not just recycling and reducing, but also reusing. To find out more about reusing, I went to the textile sale put on by the University of Minnesota Textile Center at the Reuse Center and talked to some of the people there about why they come to buy reused textiles and use them in new projects.
Oh, I'm Max. Okay. This is my first time coming to the sale.
What brings you here today?
He told me about it. He came here the other night, and I don't know, there's a bunch of sewing machines that are pretty cheap. So, yeah. It sounds awesome.
Yeah, and what are you looking for today or anything specific?
Hopefully a sewing machine.
Yeah, and what do you think you'll do with that?
I make sewing rugs. Yeah. I make rugs in my free time, so hopefully actually, like, not have to do them by hand.
Looking for some, you're making rugs by hand?
Yeah, which is not going great.
Yeah.
That was one of the most common things I found at the textile sale. People came because you could find reused textiles and reused sewing machines for far cheaper than you can find them anywhere else. In other words, they came for the
good deals.
Yeah.
It was like you can find random bunches that you didn't think you would need and you don't necessarily have a project for, but it's pretty and it's soft, so you just buy it anyway because it's so cheap.
But beyond the good deals, people found something more. As you just heard, they found in the abandoned textiles, ideas for new projects and new things they can create out of all of this accumulated scraps.
Coming for 3 or 4 years.
Okay.
I'm a fiber artist, and I mostly just come to get inspired by all the different types of things here.
Okay.
Right now, I'm just trying to think about new projects.
Yeah.
So,
and what sort of new stuff are you looking for new projects?
I'm not even so sure. I'm looking at yarn. I'm going to look at fabric. I'm looking for some stretchy fabric to use for sculptures. Yeah, I make soft sculptures, so I've definitely gotten a lot of fabric to dye and make into sculptures. And then I get a lot of yarn to make like sweaters too and other knit things.
I'm from St. Paul. I'm a seamstress and I knit, and I have been coming to this textile center resale for, I don't know, 5-6 years. And I always come when they open at 8 at this wonderful facility of the Reuse Center. And you can find a variety of yarns, patterns, fabrics, sewing machines, tools, beads, notions, just anything you can think of for your project. So it's a great annual party.
People coming to the textile center have discovered such a variety of uses for all this used fabric. They used it to make everything from quilts to baby blankets to costumes to even the clothes that they were wearing as they were shopping.
Well, I have been making pans. I call these funky pans, and they're really easy to make. You use a serger, or you can use the sewing machine either way or both, and you mix and match the fabrics that you want and kind of like piece them together so to your heart's content. So,
by talking to volunteers and longtime sale goers, I found out that it isn't just a sale of used fabric. It's a community of creators who are dedicated to putting this fabric to need.
Here, actually, I'm looking for a rug hooking frame, but it's a treasure hunt. You might just stumble on something you had no idea was here and would be very cool. It's also a great place to meet other fabric geeks. You know, sometimes you just show up at an event because people of your interest group are going to be there and you'll meet them and get to chat with them. Well, sometimes hanging out in the pattern section is great. Sometimes people will help each other if they're searching for a particular pattern. Sometimes it's fun to help them look. Last time I was here, there was a woman who was looking for vintage patterns from the 1930s, and it was just fun to help her look for patterns from the 1930s. That was just cool. I was looking for patterns by a particular designer, but I took some time out to help her look, and there was just kind of a nice feeling of camaraderie. So it's just, you meet cool people here.
My name is Mary, and this is the second year I volunteered at this sale.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just really great coming together of people who love textiles and things. And it's incredibly harmonious and fun.
Yeah, and what's one of your favorite things about the sale or things about
it? Working with the people who are looking for stuff and helping them connect with things that are important in their lives and surprising, they find surprising things and lots of happy people.
Going to the reuse sale at the Textile Center helped me realize that there's more that you can do with old things than just recycling if you want to help the environment. Reusing something can mean looking at it in a new light, as inspiration for a new work of art, a new blanket, or even a new pair of pants. And I think that changing of our mindset about what we use and its value once it's been used up can be instrumental in reducing waste across the planet. For Real College Podcast, I'm Ben Hallam.
Well, that is all for this episode of Real College Podcast. Thanks to Hannah Dove, Liv Briggins, and Ben Hallam. Real College Podcast is a production of Radio K. It's produced by Ben Hallam, Liv Briggins, Nathan Fervoy, and Lizzie Ritchie. Alex Schumacher is the host and managing editor. All episodes of Real College Podcast can be found online at radiok.org or on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thanks for listening.